Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey there, welcome back to another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here with my best friends in the universe. Randy, Justin, how you doing, Randy?
I am so damn good to be back.
How you doing, Justin?
I'm good. I was trying to think where Randy went, but then I realized he just wasn't on the show.
Yeah.
He took a sabbatical. It was like, he's a college guy, so he took a sabbatical to like find himself.
Yeah, you guys did a duo last week. That was fun.
That was weird.
Oh, yeah, because usually it's like, you know, I bring up a topic and then like I'll ask questions to like get the conversation going. But then it was like just two of us, so it was good. Had a little tete-a-tete, so to speak.
Oh, I like tets.
I bet you do.
And milking but, them.
Like all of our great shows, it seems that we can't start a show without a couple sad stories. And so we got a couple Debbie Downer stories, and then we'll get to the normal fun stuff. Unfortunately, you know, Sir Roger Moore, one of the greatest James Bonds ever to live, unfortunately passed away due to complications with cancer. He was how old, Justin? You said 89?
89, yeah.
Also, I mean, a ripe old age. I think Roger Moore is it got a special James Bond for a lot of people, like especially people like our age, because he was the James Bond when we were real little. Especially for me, my grandfather was a huge James Bond fan. Like I like Star Wars, he liked James Bond, and so Roger Moore was in all the movies when I was a kid. When I go over to his house, and I one of my fondest memories of me and my grandfather when we were young, because we became real close later in life, but when we were real little, me and my grandfather weren't very close. And I remember watching View to a Kill in his living room with him and just having the time of my life. So I have a special place for Roger Moore. What about you, Justin?
Yeah, he wasn't my Bond like he is so much yours. But I will say that I remember watching most of his when I was a kid as well. It wasn't until I was a very older teenager that I really started to dive into James Bond movies, and that's when I figured out that it was a franchise that I loved. Man with a Golden Gun is probably my favorite one with Roger Moore.
Good call.
And also has Christopher Lee, who is also no longer with us, unfortunately. But yeah, that's a good one, man.
He was the man with the golden guns. Mm-hmm. And it had tattoo, the plane guy.
Sinteco or whatever his name is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever I played GoldenEye on N64, I always played with a golden gun. That way it was just like you could shoot somebody. If everybody wanted to have their own little rules. I liked it where it was one shot and you're dead kind of thing. It made more sense to me. Instead of shooting.
And then you were always the helicopter pilot, so you were all tiny.
No, I was always Xenia Zargea on the top, because I like being chicks.
Nice. I was always Jaws, so no one could complain. I'm like, I'm the biggest fucker on this game. Don't complain, odd job.
You look like Jaws.
Nah, with the teeth and everything like that. What about you, Randy? What was your thoughts on Mr. Morris' portrayal of James Bond?
I definitely enjoy the campiness that Roger Moore brought to the Bond character. But overall, I don't think his movies were my favorite. Connery was always my favorite Bond growing up. But I will say The Man with the Golden Gun is pretty amazing. I'm also trying to remember which one takes place in Louisiana. It has that crazy like sheriff guy in it. Do you remember which movie that was?
Oh, shit.
Was that Live and Let Die or... I don't remember. I feel terrible for not remembering which one it is. But I really like that one, too. It was just fun because a lot of it took place in America. So, I don't know. but it was just neat to kind of see somewhere a little bit more familiar and not quite so exotic. But I really do enjoy his Bond movies, and that is definitely the portrayal in which I will remember him by. And in fact, I put up a picture on Facebook today. It was from a student film I was helping a friend of mine with, and I was playing a James Bond type of character, so I had like the white tuxedo, and I had the total Roger Moore hair, and I had the little Walther PPK pistol, and I was totally doing the Roger Moore position. So I put that up in honor of his passing.
Nice. And it was, in fact, Live and Let Die, which is Roger Moore's first portrayal as James Bond.
Cool. Yeah, and I dig that Southern Sheriff character, because he ended up coming back on another one, too. He was, like, on vacation somewhere in Europe and runs into him again in another movie. So
yeah, I thought Clifton James.
There you go.
Sheriff Pepper.
They did so much fun, silly little stuff. That was kind of, and I'm you know, kind of sad to say, that was kind of when the franchise was going off the rails a little bit and losing focus. And becoming continually more cartoony in its action. But I don't know. It was still charming.
It's worth noting, Randy, that Clifton James actually died in April of this year.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah, and he's from Washington.
And he was in The Man with the Golden Gun. that movie has claimed a lot of lives, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So. Yeah, it is unfortunate. It's funny. I have all the for Christmas one year, my parents got me all of the James Bond movies in those box sets, the four box sets. And I remember Randy came over, and the movie, do you remember what movies we picked to watch, Randy? They were all Roger Moore movies. We picked Moonraker and Octopussy and The Man with the Golden Gun. So out of every James Bond movie, we picked those three Roger Moore movies. I don't even remember why we did it.
I think that was the first time I'd ever seen Moonraker all the way through. It's probably why we watched that one, because I really wanted to see it.
It's long. That one's so long. Oh my god! And Jaws like floats out into space, right? Or some shit.
He saves the day. Like he finds that like little girl, not little girl, the short woman, uh-huh. And like they kind of like stay behind in Moonraker, the spaceship, while it's exploding. Mm. And he saves James.
Right.
Yeah.
And they had been fighting. They were mortal enemies.
Yes, for several movies.
But you brought up an interesting point, Randy, that it was campy with Roger Moore, because it wasn't until really with Timothy Dalton that it took the way serious route and being a little bit more gory and violent.
A lot of people who are really into the Ian Fleming novels said that Timothy Dalton's portrayal of Bond was probably the most accurate to how it was written originally.
T-Doll. Living Daylights, I think, was his first one.
Yeah, Living Daylights and License to Kill. You to a Kill.
No, he did License to Kill. You to Kill was Roger Moore's last one.
Was it? Oh, okay. Yeah. You're right.
I think I really liked, I mean, looking back on it now, it's kind of very dated in its sexism and whatnot, but the Roger Moore was just kind of the ladies' man, but he is not what you would, I guess, consider traditionally attractive leading man-wise in today's day and age. But I always remember that he was the suave, kind of like, get any girl. But he's also the Bond that's most lampooned by Austin Powers, like his like karate chops. Like he wasn't the physical specimen that Sean Connery was, so he did a lot of those like judo chop moves.
Right, but I think it's also fair to say that Mike Myers probably had Roger Moore as his influence. Like, yeah, it was his Bond.
Yeah.
Growing up, you know, being a young man, he knew that he ate that shit up as he was watching it. So it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It's weird to think he's the first Bond we lost of the five. He's the first one. You know, we still got Connery and Lazenby, Dalton, Brosnan and Craig. So, knock on wood that we keep them for a while.
Yeah, really.
What the hell's George Lazenby up to these days?
Probably not a hell of a lot.
You know, on Her Majesty's Secret Service is ranked really high on a lot of Bond websites. If you go to like their rankings of the films, like it's either aged real well or just for whatever reason people have fond memories of it, but. I wouldn't put it in my top half of Bond films, but a lot of people are putting it in like top five.
Huh. He's the voice of the king in Batman Beyond. You know how that we were just talking about that, Dave? Batman Beyond. When there's like those crazy guys that dress up as like playing card characters, like a royal family or whatever. He's the king. I did not know that. The more you know, as you would say. Holy shit.
Yep, right there.
Sad stuff. Three.
Yeah. Moving from sad news to sad news, and this one stung a little more than I expected it to, because of my vocalness, of my taste in his directing styles, of which I appreciate the millions of emails that I get calling me an asshole for this. But Zack Snyder, unfortunately, you know, his daughter, his 20-year-old daughter, committed suicide in March, and he had to step away from Justice League. And luckily, Joss Whedon was there to pick up the pieces and kind of move forward with it. So it was just kind of this crazy story. It was the most bizarre press release I ever got. It was like very well worded. But I guess so. The time of events go in March. You know, tragically, Zack Snyder's daughter committed suicide. Principal photography was already completed on Justice League. They'd already planned their reshoots. You know, it's a major motion picture, so there are reshoots, so it's not a sky is falling situation. And they're in heavy post-production, of which, you know, Zack Snyder's obviously involved, but he's not something to where he's cutting the film himself. So he kind of stepped away from the project in March to deal with this terrible thing that happened with his family, keeping in mind that his wife, Deborah Snyder, is also the main producer on these DCEU films as well. So the film basically lost its director and its main producer, who's also taking some time off. Joss Whedon comes in. Joss Whedon wrote what would be reshot when they do reshoots in another month or so. So Joss Whedon was offered to do it. Well, first Warner Brothers asked Zack Snyder if they wanted him to delay the movie. They said, you know, we're with you 100%. You know, family is important. If you want, we will delay this film a couple months, probably to the summertime, to let you take the time you need to grieve and come back, which I thought is a pretty cool move for, you know, this billion-dollar franchise that, you know, Warner Bros. Has already put a ton of money and marketing into, saying it's coming out in November. So Zack Snyder, you know, stepping away from the project. Joss Whedon will direct all of the reshoots, which he also wrote, and he will oversee the final post-production process for Justice League Part 1. Zack Snyder is still the director of record. You know, when the movie comes out, it'll still say directed by Zack Snyder, a Rat Pack film. Justin, I mean, it's a lot to take in. Is there anything that really kind of stood out to you as this terrible story unfolded?
Like you, I was totally shocked. I was just like, the internet's biggest kept secret was his daughter passing away. I don't know anybody that knew. Not that I know a lot of people, but just the internet being what it is, it's a crazy shocker. I think that the movie is in very capable hands, and I'm still looking forward to watching it.
Yeah. Now, Randy, what, I guess, get your thoughts on it as well, but then add on to that, what do you think this means for the film? Is this something you think that could really rally the troops around this film in a way that, you know, Batman v Superman was kind of a toxic property and it was kind of oozing into Justice League? Do you think that this may, you know, as tragic as it is, garner some goodwill with fans and movie people alike?
I don't know. I think if he had had more involvement from an earlier stage, it would get that fan cred that the franchise so desperately needs. But in the article that I read, it was saying something to the effect that, you know, he's really not, Joss Whedon really isn't going to have the ability to change the tone or the feel of the film. It's still going to, the feel is still going to be very much Zack Snyder's film. He's not really allowed to add or subtract any characters in these new scenes that he's doing. So it really seems to me like his hands are going to be tied. So it's kind of like just a buddy stepping up to help out somebody else, whether they're friends in real life or not, I don't know. But that's kind of the scenario it feels like. It's like, hey, I got to go home sick. Will you cover my shift kind of thing? Right. It's
he grows up for me.
Yeah, it's not putting your stamp on it. So I don't think it should garner any goodwill from fans because of this. Because to me, I don't really feel like it means much, other than just somebody stepping up to the plate to help out. Now, that having been said, who I do think it garners goodwill for is Warner Brothers and DC in general, because we know, or we've been talking about, the possibility of Joss Whedon doing a Batgirl standalone film. Well, you know, we already know he's dipping his little toe into the DC universe. Well, now this is kind of a little bit of an earlier entry than anybody expected, but this is really definitely confirmation that he's committed to going that route. Is that the final nail in the coffin of him ever working on Marvel projects? Maybe. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Oh, I think he burned his Marvel bridge with Age. I mean, he was pretty vocal about his displeasure with the whole process in Age of Ultron. And I think that Marvel would overlook it because Joss Whedon is a draw that is a filmmaker that would draw money. But I think that I don't think Joss Whedon has any interest in returning to Marvel.
Yeah.
What do you think, Justin? Do you think that fair? Or?
Yeah.
I mean, never say never, obviously.
Right. Never say never. It's 100% true. I think Randy is pretty on point there as far as him being done with Marvel as well. But yeah, it's cool. We were talking about this off the show too, in that it'll be a good footing for him just to kind of get the feel of Warner Brothers and how they are as producers and distributors and all that such, because they always seem to find a way. Remember, we were talking about this before. I just picture these crazy guys, like Men in Black type of guys, that come in and just change a whole movie around. So I don't know what Joss expects. You know, if he had such a hard time with Marvel, I feel like Warner Bros. Is even worse, especially when it comes to changing properties. And Batman specifically is never what the director wants unless it's Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
Right. I think this is a good opportunity for him to get his foot in the door, and maybe since they're so early on in the DCEU and they've been having problems with directing by committee, it was real interesting when Marvel hired Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck to direct Captain Marvel. On their press tour, they were very vocal that, like, people were like, hey, you've never directed action, this and that. And they kind of let us peek behind the curtain a little bit into Marvel, basically by saying that, oh, there's other people that direct the action, meaning that the second unit people, they'll take care of all the action. All they need from Boden and Fleck are to get the performance out of Brie Larson and the other people in Captain Marvel. And that it almost made it sound like these Marvel movies are being directed by, you know, you really focus on the character work as the director. You let us take care of the action and the special effects and the tone and the look. And I think DC was trying to emulate that out of the gate. And I think that maybe someone like Joss Whedon has enough star power to say, you know, I'd really like to take the reins on all aspects and oversee all aspects of this production. And Justin, you and I were talking a little bit. Does this make Joss Whedon the front runner to direct Justice League 2, Justin?
It's possible. It depends on how long he plans on taking to do Batgirl.
Do you think he could still do both? Or do you think if Justice League 2 follows in step with how Justice League followed Batman v Superman, I mean, they'll start production on Justice League 2 in January.
Right. And he doesn't even, I don't even think he has much going on in the way of Batgirl. At least he doesn't have anybody casted. I don't know if it's written yet, if he even has a first draft, but it's possible. I think it would be in his best interest to, not that I really know, but I would guess that it would be in his best interest to do the Batgirl movie and not do Justice League. Just because he's kind of grumpy right now, and I think that if he were to do his little pet project versus another big super mega production, he would enjoy himself more. Because that's really the key. When you're not enjoying your work anymore, then what's the point, right?
Right.
But I think if he really wants to do his Batgirl movie, he should do that, and shouldn't get sucked into the craziness that is a big ensemble cast like Justice League.
Right, and fall into the same Age of Ultron trap that he
yeah who needs that shit. Into. Especially if the movie isn't well received.
Right. Yeah, I mean that's an interesting point too, Randy. Is that it puts Joss Whedon in a no lose situation. If the movie turns out great, he can be the guy who kind of steered the ship in the last couple seconds to make sure everything was fine. But if it turns out to be a total Batman v Superman level clusterfuck, he can always say, "Dude, I mean, they'd already done 7 months of production and 5 months of post production when I came on board this. There's nothing I could have done." Does that sound fair, Randy?
Oh, absolutely. Plausible deniability.
Yeah.
And do you agree with what Justin said? Would you prefer? Do you think Joss Whedon will stick with the character-centric, smaller Batgirl movie as opposed to trying to jump right into another just insane blockbuster like Justice League 2?
Yeah, because he did have such a negative experience with Avengers, I think it would make sense that he would kind of, for his own sanity, want to go back to kind of his roots or his comfort level, and that would be something like, you know, a very small character-centric Batgirl type of movie. Sure. Yeah, I see him doing that more so than being gung-ho about Justice League 2, but who knows? I mean, if they throw enough money at him, you never know what's going to happen. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy that's hurting for money or anything, but weird things happen when you throw money at people.
Right. They still throw some silly number like $40 million to direct this movie. Like, oh, maybe I will do that.
Yeah.
that buys a lot of dip.
That's barely half Iron Man money.
Iron Man. If you're Mr. Downey Jr., I guess. Mm-hmm. Proud to make the big bucks. Mm-hmm. So yeah, hopefully the Snyder family, you know, can, you know, take all the time they need. I've obviously been a vocal dissenter of Mr. Snyder, but I wish him nothing but the best in this endeavor. And I hope that he comes back and can continue to make movies of the quality that he made early in his career.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so. All right. Now that we got all that sour, dour nonsense out of the way, we can talk about some good stuff, some happy stuff. Now that everyone's put the knife down, turn off the Morrissey records, and get out of the shower. We'll start with some Star Wars news. So, Randy, did you see that little promo piece that came out that was in like a different language that had to be translated? That basically said that the last Star Wars, The Last Jedi, will have the biggest, most shocking revelation in all of the Star Wars franchise.
I did see that. I believe it was from like a Japanese one sheet poster or something like that. Yeah. So that's intriguing. So the internet is of course abuzz trying to figure out. What is the shocking revelation? What could it possibly be?
Justin knows.
Ooh. Justin, would you like to share?
What do I know?
It was the retcon from Empire.
Oh, yeah, that's the shocking twist, is that Kylo Ren, Ben, is actually Luke and Leia's kid. And that they retcon Empire Strikes Back to where not only do they kiss on the hospital bed, but Leia makes the sweet love to Luke. In front of
while Han sits there watching. Yeah. He's just sitting there cuckolding.
Yeah.
And he's like, "You're going to raise this one too, Han." Don't break eye contact, Han.
David, I told you that scenario in confidence.
Oh, dang.
I feel kind of naughty just even thinking about that scenario.
It's terrible.
I mean, it is important that this was definitely like a promo piece. It almost read like a movie trailer, you know, so it was very sensationalized. So I don't know if we can take it at face value, but, you know, it's Star Wars, so it's fun to take everything at face value and just dissect it and all this and that. Is Jedi plural? Is Jedi single? It's what we do as geeks, right?
Of course.
Maybe, I mean, it could be fun. What kind of crazy revelation could it be, Randy? I mean, aside from the Han Leia thing, or Han Luke, Leia Luke thing.
I think it's going to have to do, because everybody's thinking it might have to do with Rey. I think it's going to be more having to do with Kylo Ren. And I think I think we're going to find out more about his motivation. And really, I have no inside track on it whatsoever, and I'm going to sound like a broken record when I say this, but I really do think that he might be redeemable, and he might be doing all of this bad stuff for a good reason. And I think that could be the shocking revelation. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just holding on to that in some desperate attempt of reclaiming the old expanded universe. But that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, I would love for it to be a Jason Solo situation where he's tearing down the universe to save it, and it makes total sense in his demented mind. I think I've discussed it before on the podcast about Leia, about Snoke killing Leia in front of Kylo as kind of a way to finish his training, and Kylo trying to save her and failing, and that being the moment that he realizes that Snoke is the bad guy. He has to go back to his uncle and Rey and try to make amends. And then in episode 9, it would be Kylo and Luke and Rey going after Snoke. So I think that would be pretty cool. But what say you, Justin? What crazy revelation could it possibly be? Maybe it's a Finn and Poe. People have been shipping them like crazy.
Oh, that could be exciting. I don't know. Maybe Luke's already dead and she's talking to a ghost.
I had a dream where I was watching The Last Jedi and Luke was talking to nobody. And like he was just like a crazy person thinking he was talking to Yoda. And he thought he was talking to Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon. And then Rey was losing faith that Luke was just this crazy person. But then she finally connected with the Force. She finally got the glow, and then she could see them too. And so you realize that Luke isn't crazy, that he was actually communing with these Jedi, these old Jedi, just that Rey couldn't see it. And I thought that was kind of cool. But
that is kind of cool. I want to go with your version.
But I don't want Luke. I just want fucking Luke to kick ass.
Mm-mm. He's gonna be.
I don't want them to be in that cave.
His ass kicking days are done, son.
No. He's gonna be all fat and eating a turkey leg and just chilling.
but he's a different kind of ass kicking. He's not the go toe to toe with Darth Vader with his lightsaber. He's just so beyond powerful now that he can basically do anything.
Like Beetlejuice.
He didn't come.
That's what she said.
But I did!
Hey-o!
Hey!
Nice. Well, did you also see, Randy, the internet is abuzz with they leaked the original ending of Revenge of the Sith?
You know, I've seen that headline everywhere, and for whatever reason, something compelled me not to click on it. So I'm aware that it exists, but I don't know what this original ending is.
Oh, it's a good one. So it's all about Padme. Like there's nothing new with Jar Jar or Anakin or Obi-Wan. It's funny I went to Jar Jar first.
Yeah.
So throughout the film, you would have seen Padme kind of sowing the seeds of what would eventually sprout into the rebellion. Yeah, we saw a little bit of her with Mon Mothma and Bail Organa, but it would be more concrete that she was kind of going in league with these people to try to start some form of resistance. But the real big thing was that at the very end of the film, when she goes to Mustafar to confront Anakin, she was going to come armed with a knife, prepared to end the threat that is Anakin Skywalker. And we don't get, it doesn't go so far as to explain if she still dies from a broken heart. but she was going to go to Mustafar with the intention that she might have to fucking shank Darth Vader.
That's pretty badass.
And I think that makes her character so much better and so much cooler. And of course we know she's not going to succeed. She's not going to fucking gut Anakin Skywalker in full on pissed off Sith mode, but just the fact that she had the gumption and the courage, because she's kind of, I love Revenge of the Sith, but Natalie Portman's kind of a waste in Revenge of the Sith, and this would have made her character so much more interesting. So does that excite you, Randy? Does that make it go from 6 to midnight in your pants, or do you not care?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just the thought of Natalie Portman being more badass is quite titillating, or tetillating, as Justin may say.
Yeah. But as a fellow Revenge of the Sith lover, Justin, does this make the movie even better in your eyes? I know it's already your favorite Star Wars movie.
No, it doesn't.
No. It doesn't do anything for you?
No. It's all lies and deceit.
Lies. That's the ways of the dark side.
No, I don't think so.
No. Well, all right.
It does nothing.
Well,
he should have force pulled the babies out of her, is what he should have done.
And onto his lightsaber blade.
That would have been cooler.
Like a shish kebab.
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
Bad, bad person, Randy.
Hey, I was just interpreting Justin's thoughts. Don't bring this around on me.
There you go. All right. Well, we'll stay with you, Justin, because you have better, happier things to say, I'm sure, about Alien Covenant, which you saw this weekend.
Oh, man, I wish Anakin would force pull the aliens out of people. No, I didn't enjoy it. There, I said it. It wasn't a good movie. I went in with relatively high expectations on account of me being such a huge Alien fan. And I think this one missed the mark. They had a crew that I wasn't terribly excited about, save for two characters. We'll call them Kenny Powers and Haircut. And those two are the main focus of the story, at least. In my eyes, they were. But it took away from the crew and showed a lot of aliens. A lot of gore, a lot of chest bursting and vomiting and blood, and while I am no stranger to gore and it typically doesn't affect me, I thought that this one just tried to crank it up to 11 with the gore to try and scare people in some way, but for me it fell flat. It was not good.
Did it seem like they were going for cheap thrills and gore over like the tension? I mean, that's really what Alien did real well, is just ratcheted up this tension. Like, it took like the old tired trope of like this monster is in this building and it's going to murder everybody, and they just ratcheted it to like 12 with the tension. Is that kind of what they did, or did they not really sustain that?
Yeah, I don't think they were able to sustain that at all. In fact, I think because they showed so much of the alien activity, it took away from the scare. Like, with Jaws, it's like an hour before you see the shark, right? At least.
Yeah.
It's your imagination that's doing all the work. And for us, of course, we have been looking at aliens since forever. Since, like, 1979 or some shit. So we know what to expect, and it would have been in their best interest, at least in my mind, to sort of keep it more of a mystery as to what's going on, as opposed to the in-your-face CG chest-bursting activity. To the point where when the aliens even protrude the body, they start to really take shape and sort of show their articulation and style, and we had never really seen that before. Normally they burst out and they start running and you don't see them again for a while. Now it's like close-ups of the alien, and I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeVille, is basically what that's like, and it doesn't work. And one of them almost looks like just like this puppet that's just kind of moving its little appendages around, and it looks really weird, not cool at all.
So there was more than one xenomorph?
Yes.
Spoiler alert, I guess.
Well, I mean, so it's a whole crew, and they're on a planet that they aren't familiar with, and there's all sorts of crazy happening. And they went so far as to take the movie in a totally different route than I was expecting, as far as sort of a quasi-origin story, as it were. And I personally was more of a fan of knowing little to next to nothing about how the xenomorph comes to be. Short of there's an egg, a face hugger, a xenomorph. That's all I ever needed to know. And this movie tries to go a little bit deeper.
Tries to give too many answers?
Yes, and really all it does is make more questions.
Your questions have answers now. This is good news.
Yeah. Maybe I'll answer your question with a question.
Yeah.
So what? I don't know. I give it a C minus.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just couldn't drag myself to see it. I just wasn't. Nothing was connecting with me as far as the marketing went, and so I decided to see a bunch of other movies that probably were equally as bad. But you know, damn it, I saw them.
There you go.
Yeah. Well,
are you going to tell us what you saw?
Sure. I saw Baywatch, King Arthur, and Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
What was your favorite?
Of those three, probably King Arthur, surprisingly.
Really? You were all on board for Baywatch.
I was. Yeah, Baywatch was kind of a disappointment. It's funny, like, you know, The Rock and Zac Efron are amazing together, and they're super funny, but it's like the most lowbrow comedy ever, and to where it's funny for a while. After a while, it gets a little bit grating, but it tried real hard to be 21 Jump Street, but it didn't have, like, the charm, and a lot of that has to do with Lord and Miller, who directed 21 Jump Street. You know, they're a little bit better than Seth Goldberg, and so yeah, it was all right. But King Arthur was a nice, pleasant surprise, and I'm not telling anyone to go out and watch this in the theater. It's by no means a great film that you should rush out and see, but when it comes to HBO, when it comes to Netflix, it's definitely worth your time. Guy Ritchie does some really fun stuff, and he really turns the King Arthur myth on its head. This is not a film that's trying to build a shared universe like we're going to get to in a second. It doesn't. Guinevere's not in this movie. You know, there's so many Arthur mythos characters that aren't in this film, and it's just this pretty cool story about Sons of Anarchy coming to roost as the King of England, and they do a real interesting thing at the beginning to where we see. They probably shot 5 or 10 minutes of child Arthur and then 5 or 10 minutes of adolescent Arthur. But when they play it back in such a way that those 10 to 20 minutes of film are shown in like 50 seconds. And so you're able to visually catch everything that's happening and understand what's going on without having to sit through those 20 minutes of exposition. And it's just really, really cool, really well done. And the way they make, you know, his interactions with the sword is, you know, the sword basically represents like trauma. And every time he tries to do something with the sword, it doesn't end well until he's able to master the sword of Excalibur. So like I said, check it out. It's fun.
No.
Wait. But we were talking, we mentioned shared universe, so we've known for a while that Universal is making a shared universe out of their monster franchise, which they're kicking off with The Mummy, which comes out next month, starring Tom Cruise as, who knows?
The Mummy.
Yeah, he's probably Van Helsing, but they're not saying, because he is going to appear in several films. Russell Crowe's going to be in it, he's going to play Dr. Jekyll. Of course, also becomes Mr. Hyde. And so earlier this week, Universal unveiled the name of their universe. It's going to be the Dark Universe, which is meh, I guess, as far as it goes. But was even cooler is they officially named the next movie as Bride of Frankenstein. It's going to be directed by Bill Condon, who did Beauty and the Beast, the last two Twilight movies, you know, Chicago, all those movies. And that Johnny Depp is going to play the Invisible Man when they have that film, and Javier Bardem is going to play the Frankenstein monster when they do that film. So presumably he'll also be in Bride of Frankenstein. They also announced that Alex Kurtzman's going to kind of be the point person for this shared universe, along with Fast and the Furious is the guy who wrote the last like six Fast and the Furious movies, Chris Morgan, I believe, and then Christopher McQuarrie, who directed the last two Mission Impossibles and is kind of like Tom Cruise's go-to guy. So that was a lot. I said a lot. Randy, any of that exciting to you? You care about this shared universe? Are you excited for all of those names that I brought up, or what?
I mean, you're dropping some pretty big names, so that's kind of cool. I had no idea that Johnny Depp was going to be the Invisible Man, so I'm a little intrigued. I don't know. I'm definitely going to see The Mummy just because I do, as much as I may shit on the idea of rebooting a franchise that I already loved so much. I do like Tom Cruise. I would like to see what he brings to this kind of movie, and it is especially cool to think that he might be Van Helsing, which is kind of a neat character. So I'm willing to give it a shot. I'm not going to just quickly slam the door on it, despite my possibly better judgment.
What about you, Justin? Any of this excite you?
No, not at all. I fucking hate Johnny Depp. He is a wife-beating piece of shit, and I'm not interested in giving him
broke.
Any money. Yeah.
He needs your money, though.
I know. Fuck that guy. I don't know. That just bothers me. I want him to not be in movies anymore.
Well, what about
I said it.
What about the prospect of the Bride of Frankenstein? You know, she was kind of the first female monster. Any interest in that? Or any? I guess we start at the beginning. Are you interested in The Mummy at this point?
No. I mean, I'll go see it because I liked the one in 99, like the original. Well, not the original, you know, the most recent.
Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, rendition of The Mummy. But I'm a sucker for the Hollywood monsters, you know, like, I like creature features, but it just irritates me to no end that Johnny Depp is a part of this.
Yeah. Well, he's not a part of The Mummy. Well, we don't know. He could be for all we know, but
they're like, well, maybe if we make him invisible, people will come see the movie.
He's really here.
Yeah. Fucking asshole.
Was Chevy Chase busy? He didn't want to reprise his role.
I love that movie, Memoirs of the Invisible Man.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty decent.
I know. I'm a sucker for the voiceover, too, though. That shit's cool.
I like when he, like, eats the solid food. You see, like, in his guts and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a sucker for Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is consistently awesome in all of his movies, and regardless of what he does outside of the arena of filmmaking, I've yet to not be entertained by a Tom Cruise film. Like, he just is the very definition of a movie star, and he does not appear to be getting older, so he may in real life be the mummy. I don't know. So just his pedigree alone puts my foot in the door for The Mummy and allows them to wow me with their shared universe between Russell Crowe and Tom Cruise. And I guess I'll go from there.
And you know what? That's an interesting point. I forgot about Russell Crowe and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I don't see how that's going to be a good movie, like a feature film. It's more of a short story than anything else. There's really no need to make that a whole feature film. It'll be boring.
I think he's the Nick Cage of this franchise.
Yeah, that might be true.
And then Nick Cage, I mean, fucking, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. Samuel L. Jackson's kid. Nick Fury.
Nick Fury, yeah. Just tying it all together. I mean, honestly, the best work of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is really that Disney cartoon, Mr. Walker and Mr. Wheeler. Those of you that have seen it will know how amazing that is. Where it's a super friendly guy, and then he gets in the car, and he just turns into an animal. And he's fucking, he hates everybody. It shows what road rage is all about. And it is timeless and true to this day. And for me, it doesn't get any better than that.
Bride of Frankenstein comes out February 14, 2019. So you can, make a date out of it.
Oh, there you go.
If your date likes monster movies.
And who's going to play the lady with the hair?
We don't know yet. They have yet to cast...
Captain Phasma?
Yeah. I'd watch Gwendolyn and Christie in that part. But the only thing we know is that Bill Condon's going to direct it. We don't know any other details as far as casting goes. And the assumption being that Javier Bardem, since he is Frankenstein, that Frankenstein would appear in the Bride of Frankenstein movie. Mm. Should be interesting to see him appear in that film before he gets his official origin. Not that these characters need origins. Everyone knows the origin of Frankenstein, for Christ's sake. Mm-hmm. Fire! Fan!
I liked Kenneth Branagh's Frankenstein.
Mary Shelley's Frankenstein?
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
with De Niro.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't amazing, but it's fun to watch.
Yeah, it was interesting. Same thing with like Bram Stoker's Dracula. Like, they're both really long, but they both have really interesting like visuals. Like, I remember Bram Stoker's Dracula. What really caught me was like the opening where they talked about like kind of how he became Dracula. You know, that he fought and killed all those people, and then he came back and his wife was dead, so he kind of freaked out. But
yeah. That Dracula, The Untold Story was pretty good, too.
Yeah, with Luke Evans.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, originally, they were toying with the idea of making that the first movie in this shared universe, but I guess box office being what it was, they decided to distance themselves from it.
Ah.
They didn't want it to be the Incredible Hulk of this shared universe.
Interesting.
That we're the outlier.
Did you ever read the book, either of you?
No.
Dracula? Oh. The first half's pretty cool when they're like in the house and you know, the real estate guy's there, the banker dude, and he's just getting creeped out by all the weird shit happening in the house. I always like that part.
But the second half's no good?
Yeah, I mean, it loses me.
It's not a big book, right? It's only like a couple hundred pages?
It's short, yeah.
So, maybe one day. Bucket list it.
I think it's free. A lot of those old literary works you can just download for free.
Yeah. Public domain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess shifting from one Tom Cruise cinematic masterpiece to another, Tom Cruise says Top Gun 2 is definitely happening, and they may start filming as early as next year.
Oh, really? They just got to get Val Kilmer to fit inside a jet?
Yeah. He's gonna drive car. He's driving those cargo planes full of rubber dog shit, so he doesn't have to be as thin. But Justin, it's got to excite you, right? Top Gun.
It does. I'm a fan of the Top Guns. They're gonna be instructors who got to show boys how to fly. That's how it's gonna be.
The new Jester and not Jester.
Well, yeah, exactly.
What was Tom Skerritt's name?
I don't remember.
Because Jester was Michael Ironsides.
Yeah. I don't remember.
Huh, no. I mean, he never gets in a plane, so I guess it's not that thing.
He does. Sorry, Saint Simmons. He gets in a plane.
Does he?
Yeah, No, it's Viper and Jester. One of them is Viper. Yeah, when they're doing they're trying to get them, and he's even like, he's like, come on, kid, show me what you got, show me what you got. But then he ends up, he leaves his wingman, and then they die.
Tom Skerritt is, in fact, Viper. Good job.
Woo! I take it that 10 minutes of silence was you looking it up.
Just letting you elaborate while I looked it up. But yeah, that's exciting. What about you, Randy? You I know you're an enormous need for you feel the need for speed. So, what say you?
Sad.
It's been so long since the last one. But hell yeah, why not? I'm game. Bring it on. I was just talking about earlier how much I like Tom Cruise. So sure, let's do it.
It's only been like 30 years.
Yeah, 1986. 31 years, good lord.
That's not that long, really.
And the fact that Tony Scott is, you know, no longer with us.
Oh, that's true. But now there'll be female fighter pilots, and it'll be cool, and things.
Yeah. Well, as of right now, the only two cast members that are listed on IMDb are Tom Cruise and Val Kilmer. And Kilmer, not Kilmer, with David Ellison and Jerry Bruckheimer returning to produce. And there are currently 5 writing credits on this, which is usually not a good sign.
Jesus.
Writing by committee.
Yeah, so we'll see. But I am excited.
Are you? I am too. It's worth noting that Mr. Tom Skerritt was born in 1933.
Oh, wow.
That's a long time ago.
I like Tom Skerritt.
I do too.
He's in a lot of good movies.
He was in Picket Fences.
He was, in fact, in Picket Fences. That was a deep pull there. Mm-hmm. Out of all his credits, you're like, Picket Fences.
What else do you need?
That's true. Like Poltergeist 3.
Or Alien.
Steel Magnolias.
He doesn't make it. It's all good.
He doesn't steal Magnolias. Julie Roberts doesn't make it and steal Magnolias.
Oh, yeah.
It's very sad.
She ate that Mystic Pizza and got food poisoning.
She had a comment. Doctor said, don't get pregnant. She got pregnant. It's what happens. Doctors, no thanks.
Mm-hmm. They went to school.
Yeah, they went to school. You should listen to them.
Longer than most people.
Yes. They're still paying off student loans. How much they liked it.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, how we didn't need a Venom movie. We didn't want a Venom movie. We can't believe they're making a Venom movie. But now they're making. Now not only are they making it, Tom Hardy's going to star in it. So Mad Max himself, who didn't even star in a Mad Max movie, is going to play Venom. Do we care? Justin?
I don't, and I think everyone that ends up working on this movie is going to end up hating Tom Hardy.
It's kind of his thing.
Right? Bit of an asshole, that guy.
Randy, do we need this movie? Do we care about this movie? Knowing that it does not take place in the same cinematic universe with Tom Holland's Spider-Man Homecoming.
No, I don't think... For me, it's hard to even have Venom in a universe without Spider-Man. Or much less without a Spider-Man that we are established with and used to. So, I don't know. It's an interesting character, and the casting, I think, is great. But, I don't know. It's going to have to be a hell of a story to seem worthwhile.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned that it's not in the same universe. And that's fine when it comes to comic books, because there's so many different parallel universes. But when it comes to trying to drive people to the movie theaters, it makes way more sense to have it be one cohesive, connected universe.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, you know, your average moviegoers, you know, take, like, my mom or my wife, you know, she's not, they don't realize that they're not related. They're going to be like, why is this Spider-Man different than the other Spider-Man?
Mm-hmm. Why is his name Miles Morales?
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe they throw us a bone and make it Miles Morales just to shut the fucking internet up. People, we get it. You want Miles Morales.
People like their Miles.
Yeah.
His Spider-Man costume is cool, though.
It is. I'm fine with Miles Morales, too. I think he's a cool character, and he's super complex, and it would even work out because Miles Morales tries to be the best Spider-Man he can because he failed Peter Parker, and Peter Parker is dead. So, you know, it could be a cool little way to have it still kind of be in the same universe while addressing why Peter Parker's not around. I think that'd be cool. Speaking of things that are not cool, Justin, you love Resident Evil, right?
I do. I love it so much, Dave, that I want them to reboot the franchise, like, immediately. Can I say that with a straight face?
But not just one movie, right? You want more than one.
Oh,
right?
I need a half a dozen at least. Holy shit. I need a baker's dozen. Give me like 13 of these fucking movies.
Well, it's important to note that there have been six already, and they have grossed cumulatively over $1 billion. So it is a viable franchise, but is it a franchise they should have immediately rebooted? I mean, the last one just came out this year.
Yeah, I know. They're into that sort of thing. But you know what's funny is, stresses me out, but what is it? Capcom does Resident Evil, and Capcom is no stranger to reboots and sequels. That's kind of what they do. It's their jam. So it's not surprising at all, as absurd as that sounds, for them to reboot Resident Evil.
Yeah, makes sense.
Just throwing that out there.
I've been watching a ton of videos on, like, Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter, since you mentioned Capcom. Street Fighter is by Capcom. Considering it went from Street Fighter 2 Championship Edition, Street Fighter 2 Turbo Edition, Super Street Fighter 2, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, and they went, like, 30 titles before they finally went to Street Fighter 3. So what you say makes a lot of sense.
Oh, I know. It's absurd. And fucking, isn't James Wan, he was supposed to be doing a Mortal Kombat movie, and now he's going to be a part of this Resident Evil shit, I think.
Yeah, he's gonna produce the franchise as of right now. You know, whether or not that means he's just going to get everything set up for people to take over later. But as of right now, he's the Kevin Feige of this cinematic universe. And, you know, he's obviously a big horror guy.
Yeah, he did Conjuring.
Yeah. He did Insidious. He did The Conjuring. Producing.
And that's cool because he was going to be a part of Mortal Kombat. I don't know if he was just producing it or if he was trying to get them in the right direction, but he was definitely going to be a part of the new Mortal Kombat franchise.
He is still listed as a producer.
Okay.
For Mortal Kombat, but as far as directing, he's got Aquaman right now. And then before that, he had Conjuring, The Conjuring 2, Furious 7, Insidious 2, Conjuring, Insidious. And then he directed the first Saw. So,
but see, the thing, Steve and I talk about this quite often, actually. In video game, or films that are based off of video games, are extremely hard to do. And, at least in our minds, the first Mortal Kombat movie is probably one of the best. It wasn't until Warcraft came along that they sort of upped the ante a little bit. But, I mean, because you figure the first Resident Evil was all the way back in 2002. That's a long time ago.
Absolutely.
15 years. You could argue that Tomb Raider was fun, and I would let you have that. It's not my favorite. For me, it's Mortal Kombat, the first Resident Evil, and then Warcraft. So that's 95... 2000 and what, 2, and then
2016. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a large gap.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's really tough. And we'll probably talk about this in a bit. Is Uncharted on our list of topics?
Yeah, it's next, yeah.
Okay, so that's a good thing to get into, but that might be another franchise that's worth revisiting, only in that if you're a fan of Indiana Jones, I think that Uncharted has a place in your heart.
Yeah. And I think the problem with most video game adaptations is that video game playing is you taking an active role with the protagonist, to where when you're watching a film, it's a passive experience. And I think that a lot of narrative storytelling in games is so, not weak, but is so veiled, just because it relies on you doing certain things to accomplish certain parts of the game. And so as the player, you're filling in a lot of those gaps, to where in a film, those gaps need to be filled in for you. And if you half your brain isn't concentrated on not dying, and if your whole brain is focused on the story, that some of these stories don't coalesce like they should.
Right. And not only that, but when it's a video game that has several hours to tell its story, there's a big difference between, you know, a 10 to 20 hour game, or even, you know, something like Warcraft, where it's literally years of people playing, getting crammed into a 2 hour film.
Yeah. Well, Justin had mentioned Uncharted, Randy, and you played Uncharted, right? You're a big fan of the franchise.
I have played Uncharted 2. I think that's the only one I own, the only one I've played.
All right. Well, there's only four, and the four just came out. So what attracted you about the Uncharted franchise, Randy?
Because I heard it was very much like a modern Indiana Jones. That's literally what I heard. That's what drew me toward it. And I heard he bore an uncanny resemblance to a young Nathan Fillion. And I thought that was interesting, too.
And now, did you find that it satiated that hole that is Indiana Jones in video games?
Oh, absolutely. It was a lot of fun. It was probably more fun than any Indiana Jones video game I've ever played. So, yeah, no, I was all over that. I loved it. That was the sole reason I got my PS3, so I could play Uncharted 2.
And so does that make you excited for an Uncharted film? Because it can be kind of like a Mummy/Indiana Jones analog for you?
Absolutely.
Now, what if I told you that they were going to cast Tom Holland, who is in Spider-Man Homecoming, and they were going to take the story and completely make it a story about a teenage Nathan Drake, so nothing like the video games you played.
I don't know about that. Honestly, if the adventuring spirit is still there, you're talking to a guy who really actually adores the Young Indiana Jones adventures TV series and movies and whatnot, so I could be into that. I mean, age doesn't really matter, and I don't have to see him get involved in any of the adventures that we've played in the video games. I like the idea of a young kid going on adventures, too, so sure, why not?
I mean, Justin, do you agree with Randy's very Chris Hansen opinion of age is just a number?
Sort of. I mean, I think there was a flashback in Uncharted 3 that dealt with Nathan Drake as a young boy. And then if Sony wants to really invest in the actor and maybe keep him around the franchise for a while, it makes sense for every couple years for there to be a new Uncharted movie and the property sort of age with Tom Holland.
Yeah, that's a good point. We know Sony must be down with the clown for Tom Holland because they seem to be really over the moon with his Spider-Man movies, his Spider-Man portrayal. So, giving him another huge franchise in their studio, they're trying to keep him tied down for a while.
Oh,
well, he's hot.
Yeah. Hot, hot, hot.
Just remember, age is the number. Randy said that. I don't think he said it. I think I inferred it.
but don't necessarily hold me to that, you know.
I put lecherous words in his mouth.
Leprous words?
Lecherous. and I'm pretty sure I shouldn't incriminate myself any further.
They were lecherous words. They were leprous parts. All right. So I got one more story, and it's a story that I love that I'm sure Justin could give two shits about. But I love the film The Dark Crystal. It was one of the first movies I remember seeing in the theater. I know my first movie that I have any memory of seeing that I saw in the theater was E.T., which made me cry the other day when it was on television and I was watching it. But that's neither here nor there. But Netflix is making a prequel series of Dark Crystal. Justin, how excited are you right now?
I'm very excited.
I don't think you are. I think there's sarcasm there.
I can't wait to watch it and hate it because I hate I hate Muppets. I hate Muppets, Dave. All Muppets. Tale of the Bunny Picnic. Kermit. Fucking Fraggles.
You hate the Fraggles?
And Dark Crystal. What?
Randy, do you also hate all things Muppets?
I don't know, man. I grew up on Muppets, and I kind of loved them at the time, so I don't really have the hate in my heart towards Muppets. Now, I will say this. I had never seen The Dark Crystal until adulthood. I didn't even know it existed, and it wasn't until probably within the last 4 or 5 years that I even saw it. Then once I saw it, I'm like, this is some creepy fucked up shit. I don't think I like the look of this. It's weird because it's like, are they Muppets? Are they little people in costumes? What is going on here? But I digress. I thought it was really fascinating, very, very visually stunning. I know a lot of people are into it, so I would definitely give a prequel series a chance. So, you know, I'll give it a whirl. I'll watch it a couple episodes, see if it, you know, gives me nightmares, and if so, then I won't go back.
The original Dark Crystal is terrifying. Like, as a kid, that was terrifying. As an adult, it's scary still. The Skeksis? Oh, man. It's just some scary, scary monsters. And I know they're puppets, but I'm still frightened of them. I don't know what that says about me.
It's because they're real. They're tangible, you know?
Maybe. Jim Henson, man. He knew what he was doing. Even if Justin hates Muppets.
Ugh, hate them all.
Do you hate all puppets or just the Muppets?
I like the jalapeno on a stick, and that's about it.
You like the Jeff Dunham puppets? Where do you fall on Lamb Chop?
Is that from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood?
Yeah, it's sort of. It's that the nice old lady.
Pass.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Well, real quick aside, I did mention that I watched ET. Sci-Fi Channel recently went through a rebrand, and for the 35th anniversary of ET, that's right, we're all getting old. They played the original version of ET with where the police officers and the military have guns, not walkie-talkies, and where Mikey, Elliot's brother, goes as a terrorist for Halloween. So it was nice to see the original cut. I own it on DVD, but usually on TV they play the Spielberg kind of sanitized version. So good on you, Sci-Fi.
That movie is so sad when he's all sick and white and dying.
Oh, I hate that.
Ugh, it's the worst.
And then it's so uplifting when he comes back. That was the part that got me when they're like escaping with all the kids, and like E.T.'s like, "I love you," and I'm like, "Oh my god, this puppet's making me cry." I was in there folding laundry in my bedroom. My wife came in. It's like, "What's wrong?" And I'm like, "Nothing. Allergies."
Yeah. Stupid Diamond Dallas Page allergies.
Oh, E.T. He found home, you know.
He did.
And you know what's really great about that movie is that aside from the mom, none of the adults are like filmed above the waist until like the very, very end when the government comes to get E.T. They're all either silhouetted or they're shot from the waist down to where you only see their legs and stuff like that. I thought that was very interesting. Spielberg, he knows what he's doing. He's going places.
Yeah, BFG.
Which was pretty good. Which BFG stands for pretty fucking good. I guess pretty's not with a B.
No. But it was on Netflix pretty soon. It's like, it's almost the equivalent to straight to video.
Yeah. I mean, Spielberg's making, I mean, the problem is right now Steven Spielberg's making great films that no one's seeing it. Like, Bridge of Spies is a pretty great movie, but no one saw that. Mark Rylance even won an Oscar for it. No one knows who he is.
Who?
Mark Rylance. He's in Dunkirk now. Oh. He was the BFG.
Oh.
That's not what he won his Oscar for, but he won his Oscar for Bridge of Spies. The Tom Hanks Cold War movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. It's no Lincoln, but, it's close. But that's all I got. You guys got anything else?
No.
Randy?
Not a darn thing.
Well, all right. Well, thanks for joining us for another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Make sure you go to geeklegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews. And while you're there, we still got one other podcast, the Pixelated Podcast with Justin and Stephen K. James talking about video games. And you can also check out the last episode of the Comic Corner Podcast. It was a great episode. Tyler and Jeff had some special guests on, and we are so grateful for all of the hard work they did over the last couple years for us, 3.5 years for us, and hope they have nothing but good things happen in the future. Not too good, not better than Geek Legacy good, because, when your girlfriend breaks up with you, you never want them to do better than you do, so, let's temper those expectations. So, but we love them, and we're very appreciative for everything they've done over the years. So, yeah. So make sure you like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter @Geek Legacy, and until next time, we'll talk to you later.